now we'll start part two of the Patrick teleconference on spiritual law. What I thought I would do for the last section is to go through this PC-10 because I find the laws there to be enough. If there are an infinite number of laws, you can go on forever. But I'm very fond of these nine. I think it's cute that there are nine instead of ten because of the Western predilection for religious order, so that they didn't get wrapped up in the magic Ten Commandments. I find that these nine cover so much ground that almost every other law that I've read about and that are in these papers, to some degree you could say that's a subset of. Now, obviously, that's not completely true, but I find the nine really describe a spectrum. So what I thought I would do is go through it, and I invite you, if you feel any protest, to speak it. If you do not speak it, at least think it. So one of the things that I do with my students is I invite them, that's why I boiled it down to one page, so I could use this as a handout in many workshops. I hand out this one page, and I invite them to read down the list of nine with the little tiny explanations rather than the extensive ones, and say, which one do you protest? Because that's probably one that you're breaking. There are also laws that we love. We're really enthusiastic. And oddly enough, that could also be an area of distortion. So opposite reactions can actually noodle down to being a similar distortion. Obviously, in protest, I don't like that law because I want to do what I please. However, in supporting a law with an, I don't want to say inappropriate amount of enthusiasm, but more enthusiasm than is warranted. When we support something with a little bit too much energy, there may be a place where we want other people to obey that rule because we're obeying it and we're not happy that it seems like other people are getting away with not obeying it. Now, this goes back to, there's some great lectures, and there are so many great lectures. But for instance, lecture 46 on authority is a fabulous lecture. And the lecture on the God image, lecture number 52, is a great lecture. And these address the issue of human rebelliousness. And that and a few other lectures, you can do some workshop games where you're working with people based on, are you a law upholder or a law breaker? And again, it would seem like those are two ends of the spectrum, but they're really not. So from a personal perspective, I really feel that I was a law upholder through submission as a child. I submitted because I didn't know how to break the law and get away with it. And then I got to a place where I was able to break it, and I loved it. I really enjoyed breaking the law. It was fun. It was juicy. It was creative and imaginative, and I liked it a lot. Then I got older, and I learned that you had to be careful. So I was still breaking the law every chance I could, but I was so subtle about it. You could hardly catch me. A lot of people thought that I was a good person. I was just cool and willing to wait long enough so that I could break a rule or try to gain an advantage. And then at some point in my life, I swung very heavily, and I find this amusing, I swung very heavily into the law upholder category. And I feel sometimes like I run around thumping Bibles and thumping lectures. You need to do this and you need to do that. And this comes from, I believe, a fairly clean place where I understand spiritual law and I've given up on trying to get away with it. It's not that I obey law all the time. It's not that I'm a goody two-shoes. but I understand that I'm not going to get away with it. And if I wish to act out, that is my privilege. Go ahead and do that, and be willing to pay the price. And that gives me a sense of safety, and that's why I've wound up in this space. But for a person who spent so much time in protest and so much time breaking the rules, I find it humorous that I have wound up where I am. So what I was describing there was the spectrum of if you hear a protest, follow the protest, because you may have some legitimate grievances and you may need to understand that rule so that you can surrender to it and see its advantages as well as where you do not get your own advantages. And on the other hand, if you feel like, yeah, that's a good one, everybody needs to obey that one, you may need to look at where you are interpreting that other people get away with stuff, and you want that stopped. So I'm going to run down them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And again, if you have any questions or examples, please feel free. So principle one is the law of self-responsibility. And that is that you create your own reality. There's a place in spiritual work where it is important to be generous and humble and to understand that not everybody is ready for this. There is a place where you create your own reality can be a statement of blame. Very, very important that that statement not be a statement of blame and that it not be used as blame. This is not to mean it's your fault. What this statement is about is that on the larger principle, on the larger spectrum of your soul, of your spirit, there is an equilibrium. However, in this life, you may be experiencing a significant amount of technically undeserved negativity. It may not be your fault, and you may have to deal with it. When we talk about spiritual law, especially in Pathwork, I really believe that Pathwork is a graduate course in spirituality. And by that I mean that when you read these, you need to read them from a place of some level of enlightenment. You need to have gotten to the place where you want to find the answers, not where you want to find excuses. And if you are downtrodden and feeling in terrible pain and not able to manage your life, my hope is that I would be able to honor that person's experience while not judging them, and believing that there's a reason why that negativity has come into their life. But in teaching spirituality, I feel that I can only teach what I believe and what the Pathwork lectures say. So when they say, you create your own reality, this is actually an invitation. It is an invitation for you to see the possibility that you control more than you realize. In previous teleconferences, I've talked about, for instance, Pathwork Guide Lecture 201, which is demagnetizing negative force fields. And in that lecture, what the guide says is that negativity comes to you because you attract it. And once you learn not to do that, it's not that nothing negative, that was a triple negative, it's not that negativity doesn't happen to you, but it doesn't happen to the degree that has been happening. That this lecture is an invitation for you to change your attitude, to change your behavior, and hold that change for a while, and notice objectively whether some aspects of your life cease being so negative. It takes some faith. It's like if you're a train, a huge, long train, when the engineer puts on the brakes, the train can take a mile to stop. It's not that the brakes aren't on, but there's a massive momentum that must be brought to a halt. If you have engendered and fomented and instigated huge amounts of negativity in your life, even though it may not seem like that to you, when you say on Tuesday, gosh golly, got it, I'm done, that's lovely. But it may take a while for that negative train to slow down, much less come to a stop, much less reverse. So the invitation here is that if spiritual law is correct, paraphrased or shortened to law of self-responsibility, you create your own reality. The invitation is for you to look at that, for you to examine your life brutally, honestly. There's a phrase someplace in the lectures, scrupulous honesty. It reminds me of taking a nail brush and really going after some part of your body. You can scrape the skin raw, and it hurts. But sometimes, to get a certain amount of debris out of your skin, that's what you need to do. And that's what spiritual work can be like. So, like, someone asked me the other day, I use a little formula that was given to me by one of my therapists. Almost everything I teach came from somebody. I am so grateful for the teachers that I've had in my life. And one of my therapists gave me a little formula because I was a little broken bird back then and could barely see 3 feet in front of me and needed a lot of help. And the little formula was, if it doesn't hurt and it doesn't work, don't worry about it. So if it's not an issue, don't bring it up. If it hurts and it works, and you want to continue, you go right ahead. If you're gaining some ground, if you're accomplishing something, even though it's painful, you go right ahead. That's your privilege. If it doesn't hurt and it works, that's not an issue because it's working and it doesn't cause any pain. That's not a disharmonious situation. Don't worry about it. But if it hurts and it doesn't work, this is where you need to look. And what she meant by that is that if pain and disharmony is being created, but nothing constructive seems to be happening, it is possible that you're not doing something appropriately, correctly, according to spiritual law, that your intention may have distortions in it. So, in the law of self-responsibility, and you create your own reality, the invitation is for you to look at a disharmony in your life, and to consider the possibility that you may be contributing to it, and for you to figure out some way to test that theory. There's a place where past work can be intellectualized, and by that I mean I love it because I can see it as an intellectual concept, even though I know it must come at some point into my heart. I enjoy having both worlds rather than only having emotion and feeling. So when you think that, you say, how could I possibly be contributing to this? Look around. Take a look. Where is the disharmony happening? The purpose of daily review, which I espouse to everybody that will listen, is that sometimes it is hard to recognize signals. So keeping a daily log can help. That it's hard to figure out all this stuff, and that keeping a very, very brief, simple log of disharmony can lead you to say, you know, there is a bit more misery in my life than I thought. Or, I get angry more often than I realize. I really didn't realize that I'm angry 10 times a day. You may realize how you withdraw 10 times a day. Well, withdrawal creates disconnection. So if you withdraw without realizing it 10 times a day, and other people feel stung or abandoned, or that you're not interested, they may go off and do something else. And then when you go back, when you come out of your withdrawal, you say there's nobody there. the invitation here is to see how you contribute to your reality. Now, the next teleconference is going to be on relationship, but I want to bring one aspect in here. In relationship, you are never more than 50% responsible. So when the guide says you create your own reality, you create only your own reality. So if you're in a relationship with somebody, you may be creating 50% of the mess, and it may be a big mess, and it may hurt like crazy. But if you're in a relationship with someone, and you haven't got them chained to the bedpost, and where they cannot get away, if that person is of their own free will involved with you, they also carry 50% of the responsibility. So when you read, you create your own reality, that's very specific. Your reality. You do not create the other person's reality, and they do not create yours. So the second quote that's given under this is, your life experience are a reflection of the beliefs in your soul. You should never believe for one instant that what you experience is unjust and unfair, no matter how it may appear that way. In the last analysis, in absolute truth and reality, it is your misconception that has caused it. That's from Lecture 48. So what it's saying is that if you are presented with a situation that is unjust and unfair, the invitation is to truly examine it. Now again, it can't be a catch-all, but it is true that sometimes you come into this life with a lot of karma, where you're attracting negativity to you, but there's a reason. And that may feel unjust and unfair, and you may not have a handle on why this is for your spiritual good. But in the surrender of saying, but it's in my life, how can I work with it? How can I change the reality? That's what you create your own reality is about. And I went on a riff a while back about attitude, because attitude is mentioned all over the guides. Your reality is interpreted based on your attitude. If I am sleeping on a hard bed and I feel that I'm being punished, then my attitude may be, oh, woe is me, I'm being punished. If I'm on a hard bed for another reason, I may say, this is building my spirit. I'm a little soft on some things, and a hard bed could give me a different attitude. My attitude changes the reality of the bed, because there is no reality in the bed. There is no reality in a low-paying job. It's a matter of what are you inspired to do about it. Do you want to stay and simply put your head down and take it? Do you want to get out? This is what is meant by creating your own reality. A good portion of the creation is your attitude. So I'm going to go on to Principle 2. Again, the invitation is for you to speak up, so I'm going to... You guys are adults. Surely you can ask a question if you have it. Second principle is the law of paying the price. Now, in Patrick, we tease a lot about this, because this is one where a lot of people stick their tongue out. And the way I try to explain this principle is, on a human level, it is a common experience to pay more than you should have paid. It is a common experience to be overcharged. It is also a human experience to be undercharged and dance away thinking, I got a deal. This is not about bargain hunting. And this is not about signing a poor contract because you were ignorant. This is spiritual. And so what it boils down to is this quote from Patchwork Guide Lecture 16. Spiritual food does not come to you by itself. You have to go out and get it the same way you have to get your physical nourishment. You have to earn your bread. You have to go to the trouble to provide for it, buy it, prepare it, and eat it. This is just as true concerning your spiritual bread as it is your physical bread. You earn your spiritual bread by your sincere desire to receive it. You prepare your spiritual food by looking for the right source for you. By going to a certain amount of trouble in order to get it. And you digest it by thinking through for yourself what you have heard or read, by meditating about it, by trying to apply it to yourself in some way so that something will change for the better within you. So the law of paying the price on a spiritual level, instead of feeling like you have to pay and pay and pay and you may or may not get what you pay for, on a spiritual level, it's perfect. If you pay, you will get. Now, on a teasing level, once you have really bought into this law, you're like the traders in the stock pits waving your money, saying, somebody take, because if you take, I get. There can be an enthusiasm every time you have to pay an extra bill because you've either paid off some karma that you didn't know about by getting to having to pay out some extra money, or if you do that, something is going to come back to you. Now, I practice what I preach, and when I moved to Australia, I lived in Australia for 7 years, and American parking signs are very obtuse, but I tell you, you have never seen obtuse until you've seen an Australian parking sign. I would sit under the sign, staring at it, trying to read it, trying to figure out, is it legal to park here? I'm a fairly educated person. I would read it 5-6 times. Presume I was legal, go away, come back, and get a parking ticket. It was very frustrating. I asked Australians to help me out, and they said, we don't understand them either. You can go off about that. You can start charging and screaming and waving your arms about bureaucracy and the greedy tax. You can do all that. I decided to do something different. I decided to call it random taxation. And I got at least 7, if not 10 parking tickets. Now, that's a lot for me. I'm a law abider, and I tried to read those parking signs. And I still got 7 to 10, and they were 100 to 150 a pop. They were expensive parking tickets. And every time I got one, I said, random taxation. You're not an Australian citizen, and you're living in a beautiful country. They need $100 from you. Pay the nice man, Jan. And I did that for a purpose. I wanted to encourage myself not to protest on the belief that Spirit would not take $100 from me unless there was a purpose. Now, I don't know what the purpose was. I got a lot out of simply saying random taxation. The Australian government deserves this. Just write the check, Jan. Even that gave me something. I was calm, I was quiet, I was deliberate. I would shrug my shoulders and say, you need to learn to read whenever I got the parking ticket. People were amazed by my attitude. I just shrugged. So in paying the price, again, on a spiritual level, this should excite you, she says with a grin, because she's played with this for many, many years. This should excite you. If you pay, you will get. So the other examples, the phrases, are there is a price to be paid for every desired gratification. Every advantage has its disadvantage. There is a price to be paid for everything. It is not punitive. It is not meant to be punitive. Spiritual law cannot be punitive. It is a simple equation. You get, you pay, you pay, you get. Principle number 3, law of cause and effect. There's a whole lecture on this. It's a wonderful lecture. It's titled Commitment, Cause and Effect. And the lecture is about the fact that commitment is a is a giving, it's a paying. That by making a commitment, something happens. And it goes deeply into the idea of cause and effect. One of the points that that lecture makes, I believe it's 245, you'll have to forgive me, I can't completely remember what the lecture number is. One of the points it makes is that as you evolve spiritually, cause and effect come closer and closer together. And that less developed spirits, not people, spirits, less developed spirits may have a disconnect between cause and effect. And that is a terrible thing, because if you don't get the effect, you're not prompted to trace it back to the cause, and you may not be able to address it. So a total disconnect between cause and effect can mean that you suffer the effect with no hope of ever uncovering and addressing the cause. So as you come up the ranks in spiritual development, cause and effect happen faster and faster, because the presumption is if you see the effect and you see the cause, you'll address it. We're simply reminding you that something has gone amiss. We're giving you a little smack on the hand, expecting that you will clean up your act, that you will address a deficiency in integrity, that you will look for the distortion if you have a hint that there is one. And that's all we're telling you with this little effect, is that there is a cause. So as you can see, the law of the cause and effect reflects on the law of paying the price, also on the law of self-responsibility. Law of self-responsibility would say, did you get any effects? Yes. Did you look for the causes? No. Well, what do you want? You create your own reality. You're in disconnect by choice. You want to get out of disconnect? Go find the causes. Look at the effects and go find the causes. Pay the price. Principle number four is the law of living in truth, which is facing life. And a simple version of this might be that you need to not run away from life. So the quote from Lecture 25 is, to face life's reality merely means to face yourself as you are, with all your imperfections. Embrace life wholeheartedly, without fear, without self-pity, or being afraid of being hurt. Say to yourself, in order to become what I would like to be, I must first, without fear or shame or vanity, face what is in me. Lecture 26 is called Finding Your Faults, and when it's used in workshops, there's an almost universal reaction. And the exercise, as described in the lecture, which is what the invitation is to workshop participants, is to sit down in pairs and to, for one person, to give the other person a list of faults. And the people are terrified. I'm going to be eviscerated by this person. I'm going to be destroyed. It very seldom happens, because people who come to spiritual workshops are not out for vendettas the way the world might have given you the impression it was. But for another person to sit down and very lovingly reflect to you, I like you very much and you're very interesting. You do talk a lot, and sometimes when you talk a lot, I get the feeling that you're not paying any attention to my contribution. Well, that's a fault. It may lead to disconnect and to a lack of relationship. The law of living in truth simply says, listen to this. Listen to what might be true, even if it's hard for you to accept. See if you can be open to the reality of who you are. Because it doesn't honestly matter whether we're fat or tall or short or thin or smart or stupid. People who are happy in their own skin tend to be happy people. People who accept who they are, that doesn't mean you don't strive to become better. It means that you accept who you are and you have a dream and a goal that you want to take on. Principle 5 is the law of brotherhood, and I use that in teaching because, the way I use it in teaching is that it's very, very common. I don't normally get a client who walks in and says, I really hate the entire world, and I wish they all died, and they're all bad. Now, they may think that, but they don't say it. I do get a lot of clients who are cruel to themselves, who are negative towards themselves, who hold themselves with a lack of respect, who blame themselves. This tends to be considered more good than the person who says, everybody else has a problem, I don't. And so I have found the law of brotherhood a very useful thing to basically bring them up short. Because what I say is this, since you are one of us, you cannot hate yourself and truly love me. Because ultimately, we are connected, and you are part of me in the universal fabric. How can you truly hate yourself and also truly love me or anyone else? And it assists people in seeing that self-hate is no more forgivable than hatred of others. So it obviously works the other way in that, I shouldn't say obvious, I'm just about to explain it, so I don't mean to diminish anyone who may say, well, how does it work the other way? When we say, there's an old joke, everybody's okay but thee and me, and I'm not sure about thee. When we say, most people are good except for those guys, whenever you make exceptions to basic goodness, whenever you challenge an entire race or culture or nation or even a club of people and say, those people are bad, no, they're not. Those people are divine spirits, and they have a task, and their task apparently takes them into negative behavior. There is a way to love the divine and take action against the manifestation of negativity and distortion. In the law of brotherhood, the invitation here is to hold that love of the divine, and in that love, behaving in a way to contain the negative behavior. So it's a bit like the process of intervention. When someone is in destructive or negative behavior for whatever reason, when a group of people get together and say, this behavior must stop for your own good, for our good also, but we are concerned about you. We are afraid that you are self-destructing. And so we have banded together to come to you and try to enforce a new plan, a new support system, if nothing else to tell you that we are at our wit's end. That honors the love of brotherhood. You do not say the person is bad. You may be saying, I can no longer be present with you. And I wonder if, when I leave, the hurt you feel could lead you to stop destructive behavior. So this is the difference between law of brotherhood versus a punitive act, where you are judging the other person and determining what should happen to them. Principle 6 is the law of transformation of negativity, and the invitation there is to see that evil is not all-powerful, all-knowing. Evil is simply negativity, condensed negativity. It can even have a vendetta or a vector attached to it or a dynamic attached to it, and it can be transformed. The key is, and this is a quote from Lecture 222, the strength with which your divinity can penetrate the ego structure and manifest depends on the degree evil has been transformed throughout evolutionary development. A lot of fancy words there. Basically what it says is, if you transform the negativity that you are manifesting, your divinity shines through. Your divinity is still there, even if it can't be seen or noticed or it creates no effect. And as you transform the negativity, the divine light in you moves outward. The second quote from Lecture 22 says, "For evil has to be tasted to the brim in many cases before it can be overcome out of free will and the being's own initiative. This desire to overcome must grow through ever-mounting enlightenment in each individual soul, and this, alas, is often only possible after going through darkness." The law of transformation of negativity, once again, the underlying assumption is that you won't stay there, but that negativity may be a way for you to vomit up the distortion or the desire to be negative or the resistance to God and spiritual law. And therefore, you may have to go there. And that as you transform it, the divine is still the divine within you. Principle 7 is the law of lack of awareness. Now, this is a really interesting one. One way of explaining this law is to say that you cannot compartmentalize your life. You cannot say, "I am a good father, I am a good provider, I am a good husband, I am a good employer, I am a good friend, but I'm a thief." You can't do that. If assuming the thievery is negative and not some, you know, thievery can be a positive. It can be something that you don't know how to avoid doing. What I'm talking about here is a place where you put all your bad apples in one compartmentalized basket and say, "I'm good in all the other areas of my life, but this one and this one I cheat like crazy." The law of lack of awareness says that lack of awareness in one area of your human personality prohibits awareness in another. That lack of awareness, lack of taking responsibility, lack of understanding of the implications of this will spill over into the rest of your life. One of the things I do a lot is I try to explain to people the inconsistencies and incongruities in what we see in life. And I like to use, I don't want to call them silly, but obvious examples, popular examples, because we all see them and we kind of wonder, how does that person get away with that? How does that person, why is that person allowed to be pretty, thin, blonde, gorgeous, talented, and, you know, why is she that much more perfect than I am, and rich, and have glorious children and a great husband? How can that person be so apparently perfect? And the truth is, every person here on the planet is performing a spiritual task. So the apparent perfection of someone's life is simply your perception of what is going on. What I said earlier in this discussion, you cannot know the human heart. You cannot know what this person is learning. You cannot know they may need that much joy and pleasure in order to relax their defenses and open their heart and let one final pebble of negativity free and loose to manifest. So in law of lack of awareness, we may not be aware of what their task is, but the jealousy with which we perceive other people can be an indication of negativity that doesn't show up anywhere else in our lives. So you can be a very, very good person and yet gossip endlessly or carp or ning-ning-ning-ning-ning about someone and say, "Well, I only do that in that one place." I know a lot of, I am teasing here, but I think it's useful. I have heard helpers admit quietly and privately that they read gossip magazines in the dentist's office or at the hair salon or at some office situation where they're available. Because to some extent we would be, I say we because I do the same thing, we would be embarrassed to buy that magazine at the newsstand. But we are curious, we are human, and every once in a while we want to read about other people's trials and tribulations. And every once in a while we want to read about the 14-room mansion and the Jaguar. And we want to read about this. It may happen only occasionally. The important thing here is that you still need to be aware. If your intention is to gossip or malign, you are gossiping or maligning. And the fact that you do it only in the dentist's office doesn't really matter. What it shows you is it's there. And so when I read such magazines, I simply notice I'm eating junk food. And I look at it. And that's all the guide asks. Just look at it. And notice if it crops up anywhere else in a different way and format. And this is how you uncover some of the subtle negativity of your life. I have teased people for years that I deal with people that get enough to eat and they have roofs over their heads, even if it's a borrowed roof, even if they're living in somebody, they are not out on the street. So they have enough to eat, they have a roof over their heads, they have clothing to cover their body. Most of them have some kind of job or some kind of income or some kind of savings. A lot of us are leading relatively sheltered lives. And in that process, and by sheltered, I literally mean sheltered. And in that process, there is a possibility there to uncover some subtle levels of negativity that would not be so easily found if we were in the middle of a war zone, if we were fighting terrible diseases, if we were scouring the streets for our food day and night, or shivering all night and exhausted during the day, that a life like that may not have the time available for deep introspection to find certain levels of negativity. There may be a reason you have a calm and organized life. So back to this law of lack of awareness, if you are unaware of your life and if you are not looking at what are the disharmonies and what can I do, that lack of looking will spill over. And as it spills over, it will create more and more negativity, giving you the opportunity to notice it. Principle number 8, law of consciousness reflects experience. Now that kind of sounds like law of self-responsibility and paying the price. They are all related. But the importance here, just like there are 258 lectures and they cover different subjects, the idea is that you may need to hear it based on your particular issue. You may need to hear a specific slice, a specific focused message that includes what you are working on. And once you get it, you do, to some degree, get it all. I want to interrupt for a second and say that when I ask people to look at the lecture and look at what they protest against and what they may have a forcing current about, the other thing that I invite is that if you can totally, completely, and absolutely embrace one spiritual law, to some extent you are on your way to embracing them all, because you cannot separate them. You cannot obey the law of brotherhood and truly break paying the price or the law of self-responsibility. You can't uphold the law of lack of awareness and break the law of living in truth. It doesn't happen like that. You may do one better than the other, but that is your process. And since we are all in process on this earth, you're not going to be done with any of them. So if you find a law that you really feel that you enact without exception, do a daily review on that one. Because you may find a few oopsies, and you may be able to shiny polish that up and make it particularly shiny. which will help with all the other laws. So back to law of consciousness reflects experience. Working out of abundance produces abundance. But working out of poverty and need produces more poverty and need. All of you have known people who are poor, who do not believe they're poor, and are happy to give to others, more perhaps than you are, or others are. So that a rich person can be miserly and stingy, and a poor person can welcome people to the table and give them spending money and shower them with what clothing they can spare and give them a roof over their head. It's a matter of attitude. Someone like that who really feels that they have and can give produces similar energy in others and attracts similar people to themselves. Consciousness reflects our experience, and this goes directly back to law of self-responsibility, law of lack of awareness, and the transformation of negativity. And the final principle is the law of fully inhabiting a state of consciousness in order to grow. This one gives people, of all the laws, this one creates the most confusion. I'm not saying that I was better at it when I started, but I got a handle on it, but I must admit I find it hard to teach. So that leads me to sympathize, that if I can't teach it clearly and decisively and have great examples all lined up, it may be complex. So I'm going to read a couple of the quotes. You have to, this is from lecture 132, you have to reach a certain state and be fully in that state before it can be abandoned for a further state. It is often overlooked by man, and even more often totally ignored. This is one of the great important laws for man to know and deeply comprehend. I think that what causes the confusion with this principle is that people are overly linear. And what they hear is, you must do things 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's not exactly what this principle says. It says fully inhabiting a state of consciousness in order to grow, which means that if you skim over it as you're growing, you may need to go back. So the statement that I prefer on this principle, but the guy didn't say it, you can't use it, is you can't skip steps. That does not mean you can't take steps out of sequence, because I speak from a lifetime of doing things out of sequence to everyone's chagrin and to a flurry of authoritative statements saying, you can't do it that way. Well, you can, but you pay for it. Because when everybody else is done, you have to sneak back and get some experience that you overlooked because you were doing things out of sequence or to a different rhythm than others were. It's not that you skip the step, but you take responsibility, going back to law one, law of self-responsibility, you take responsibility that if you wish to lead a creative life and do things out of sequence or unusually, that you will be doing a backwards and forwards dance that may not be as obvious in its need to other people as it may be to you. And that if you think you got away with something, law of paying the price, if you think you got away with something, think again, because you can't skip steps. You can rearrange them. And so I like the law, because it says you can be unique, you can be an individual, you can do things out of sequence. You can do things in a creative way that nobody ever thought about before. And you will still have to do the equivalent of rounding the bases and touching each base. And if you don't, you may have to spend extra time going back and doing that, out of sequence, on your own time, in order to fully inhabit that state of consciousness and continue. So another quote for that is, you can be perfect within the frame of your present development, for instance, but that does not mean that you are absolutely perfect. Someone of much lower development than any one of you here can be relatively more perfect than some of you, can be relatively more perfect than some of you of whom more can be expected. So perfection remains relative as long as the plan of creation is not fulfilled, except with God and with Christ. So again, the law of fully inhabiting the state of consciousness in order to grow may mean that people come to this planet to experience a lifetime that has a minimal amount of negativity or a maximum amount of negativity, because they are keying in on one central thing that they have not completed yet, and they need to complete that. If I'm not being specific, it's because I have no idea what I'm talking about, because these are spiritual matters, and I would not deign to describe spirit. I can describe humanity, but to some degree, I cannot describe spirit. And when we come to this incarnation, when we lead these lives, it is useful to have a sense of humility about interpreting spirit from a position of a limited mind, of limited experience, and limited sensory experience. So those are the nine principles, and in the materials that I gave out, there is more. I was kind of enchanted. I kept opening these up and saying, there's more, and it's all different. And then I read the quote where the guide says there are an infinite number of spiritual laws, and I thought, aha! So perhaps you would like to look at 26 or 30 examples, and perhaps nine will do. Are there any last questions before we close? Okay. Then I thank you for being present. Very much appreciate your participation. And I hope you will perhaps join me in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you all for being here. It is my pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.